Hi, I'm Adrian McIntyre from Story Profit, and you're listening to the Social Media Talks podcast with Alan Hennessy from CompassMedia.ie.
Welcome to Social Media Talks podcasts, brought to you by CompassMedia.ie.
Hello and thank you for joining me. This is the Social Media Talks podcast brought to you by CompassMedia.ie, episode number 59. And the Social Media Talks podcast is sponsored by ContentCal, creating a solution to simplify and speed up how teams can plan, collaborate on, approve, publish and analyze social media content in a familiar and intuitive calendar interface. In just 2 years, they have now been trusted by over 10,000 businesses and agencies in 110 countries to deliver social media content at scale, and have recently won an award for Content Management Tool of the Year. And for more information on ContentCal, visit their website at www.contentcal.io. And the Social Media Talks podcast is proudly supported by Charity Radio, one of Ireland's leading online radio stations supporting charities across Ireland for free. I'm your host, Alan Hennessy, and this is the podcast to help business owners who want to learn more about social media marketing. And if you'd like to listen to any of our previous podcasts, you can log on to our website at compassmedia.ie/podcasts. You can also join our Facebook group by logging on to facebook.com/groups/social media talks. And we are looking forward to today's show. Today I'm going to be joined by Dr. Adrian McIntyre. And Adrian is a cultural anthropologist, international speaker, and storytelling consultant. He has lived and worked in over 30 countries, delivering over 1,500 stage presentations, given hundreds of live TV and radio interviews, and has written two speeches that were presented to members of the UN Security Council. His on-air experience began at the age of 5, as he was the co-host of the Happy Days Express, the longest-running children's radio program in Californian history. Adrian earned his PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, where he was a Fulbright Scholar and the National Science Foundation's Research Fellow. He has spent nearly a decade in the Middle East and Africa as a researcher, journalist, and media spokesperson for two of the world's largest humanitarian relief agencies in the world. And today, he advises and trains entrepreneurs, executives, and corporate teams on high-performance communication, the power of storytelling, and how to leverage digital technology to build a personal leadership brand. And today we are going to be talking to Adrian all about storytelling and the art of storytelling. So without further ado, I think we will transition straight over to the interview with Adrian. Hi, Adrian. How are you today? Thanks for joining us on the Social Media Talks podcast. It's a pleasure to have your company. How are you?
Thank you so much. I am very well, and I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. And of course, today we're going to be talking all about storytelling. So quite excited to learn a little bit more about storytelling and find out all of the tips and tricks that you're going to give us throughout the show. But before we start, I think if you could give us a little introduction into yourself. We've given you a brief introduction at the start of the show, but you might want to expand on that first.
Sure. I mean, the first thing I would say is that I'm a cultural anthropologist by academic training. And really what that means is I'm the kind of social scientist who's infinitely curious about humans. I think that the human phenomenon is fascinating. And every human being I interact with is also just such a fascinating example of our shared humanity. And I find when it comes to business, not a lot of people are thinking that way. We're talking about prospects and customers and clients and patients and all that. But behind that is something that is really wonderful. And that is that we're humans interacting with humans and being human in the process of doing that. I'm also, a lifetime media personality. I mean, this was an accident of my own birth, but I was born into a radio station family. And when I was 5 years old, my dad, who ran the radio station, had the bright idea that we should record a weekly children's radio show and that our family should be the talent, the stars of the show. So starting in 1978, he began writing the scripts for this weekly program, which was called The Happy Day Express. And it played every Friday night. And I was 5 years old when we started this thing. And we recorded 3 years worth of weekly episodes. And then that show played in reruns until I was in my late 20s. So I have the dubious distinction of having hosted the longest running children's radio show in California history.
Wow.
I'm not sure there were others, by the way, but in any case, ours was on the air for a long time. And I didn't realize for all those years, speaking on stages and in the media since I was five, studying the way in which language creates a sense of identity, both for people as individuals, for culture, for nations, for the world. Working as a journalist in the Middle East and Africa, as a researcher, as a spokesperson for over a decade, I didn't realize until a few years ago how much storytelling was the foundation of all of it. So I think even despite all of that professional stuff, I, like every other person I interact with, was taking storytelling for granted. Mm. And what I often say, Alan, when I'm giving a workshop or a speech, I'll start with a question. How do you teach a fish to swim?
Mm.
And of course, it's a silly question because you don't need to teach a fish to swim. A fish swims. That's what fish do. The next question is actually the same question. How do you teach a human to tell stories?
Yeah.
You don't have to. Just as water is to a fish, the environment that they're born into, live their entire lives in, story is to humans. The environment we're born into, the way we perceive the world, the entire reality that we occupy is a story world.
Mm.
And we don't see our stories or story itself, just like a fish never sees water. Fish see through water.
Mm.
So I often start with that because it locates this thing we want to talk about, storytelling, as something other than a marketing strategy, a communication tactic, a stage performance. I want people to grapple with the fact that whether you're in Ireland or Iowa, Canada or Cameroon, that you are a storytelling animal, that you have native fluency in the language of story, and you're probably not using that to your advantage.
Mm. I suppose I agree with you on that. It's it's only when you look at it from that perspective that you actually, I suppose, you realize that we're doing this every day of our lives, and we have done since the day we were born, and it's just the case of and especially I think when it comes to, in this day and age is that people are not telling stories. Like I know from, we're here in Ireland and whatever, and we've always had the Shanachies and, the people that tell the stories and by the fireside and stuff like that. And, I think people said, oh, that was the olden days, but I think we still do that in every shape and form. And I think every time we open our mouth, we're telling a story.
Yes. And before we open our mouth, we're telling a story. Mm. So this is another layer that I want to reveal here to make this conversation, I think, as impactful as possible. The storytelling is already happening.
Yeah.
It's happening before we open our mouths to speak. We're telling ourselves stories about ourselves, about others, about the world we live in. And the flip side of that is also true. The people we're speaking with, our audience, our customers, anyone that is watching and consuming our social media content, they are always and already telling stories to themselves about themselves and others and the world. So it's not so much that we're going to start a story when we begin to speak, it's that we're engaging the storytelling that's already happening. There's an old adage in copywriting that you want to enter the conversation happening in your prospect's mind.
Yeah.
That's the same with story. And to the extent that we can and should interrupt some of the story and change it, you know, if we want people to buy our stuff, to, you know, come into our shop and buy our products, or to hire us in our professional services firm, or, you know, whatever the thing is, to come to our clinic, we've got to change some aspect of the story they were already telling themselves before they will see that action as an appropriate step to take. Mm. So we're all swimming in a sea of story. The people we want to reach and connect with are telling stories that in many cases don't serve them. And if we want to have any hope of being of service, we need to interrupt those stories and sometimes invite them to tell a better story.
And I think I agree totally. I see exactly where you're coming from on that. And, you know, I think it is, like, at the end of the day, and I've said numerous times on this podcast, is, you know, it's about adding value, but it's also about thinking about what it is that, you know, as you say, is changing the narrative of that story to suit that particular, whether it be a product, a service, or a person that you're talking to. And by doing that, you're telling a totally different story. And, you know, no two people are obviously the same. So you have to think about that, I suppose, as much as anything else before you do it. And the other thing there, and it's just something that you said there that sort of triggered something off here with me, is that when you're saying, you know, we're already telling stories before we even open our mouth, before we engage. And I think that's very true, because I think we do everything, of course, twice. We do it once in our head, and then we do it, the next is when we open our actual mouths as well. So, sure. You know, I can see that where you're talking, where you're coming from on that particular angle.
Well, there's two directions that I want to take us simultaneously, which is sort of awkward. You can't walk down two separate paths at the same time. But one is, I want to address something that you said, which is, you know, that we're somewhat the same, and of course we're different, and that's true. I want to plant a little flag here, put a pin in this moment in the conversation, and maybe return to it, because I push people, I encourage people, I gently nudge them, if you will, to get more personal and to tell more personal stories. But I do that with a commitment, and I also teach people how to do that in a way that it's your personal story, but it's not about you. That's a bit of a paradox, but I'll explain what I mean. Mm. So many of us, I think, automatically think that our personal stories are the things, that's what separates us. And so therefore, you know, it sets us apart in a way, usually not a good way. You know, we think that, I can't talk about that situation because it was so awful, or because I got hurt or humiliated in that moment in my life, or because someone did something awful to me and I'm ashamed, or because, you know, I made a huge mistake and I did something that I regret. And now I can't, you know, kind of reveal any of that. Mm. Those stories, we often hold them as the thing that separates us, when they're actually what unites us.
Yeah.
There's not a person here in Phoenix, Arizona, or in Ireland, or anywhere that has not been hurt or heartbroken, hasn't made a mistake, hasn't been wronged in some way, hasn't struggled with something. And to the extent that we can reveal those moments when it's appropriate, I mean, not every story should be told all the time. And I think we should get more very practical here, you know, in a bit, and talk about how to do this. What we find is that when we share what we thought was our unique experience, there's an aspect of it that so many people can connect with. And that's what we want. Now, here's the irony. We already know this. We just don't live like this. We, all of us, you, Alan, me, everyone listening, we, when we're out in the world, and we're going about our affairs, when we're in the shops or down the pub or wherever we are, right? When someone is trying to impress us, we're never impressed. We see right through it. So you know what they're doing. It's just super not impressive. And yet we think, as business owners, as professionals, that when we want to go out into the world, what we got to do is, you know, like, impress people. You know, it's like we know that, but we haven't connected the dots here. You know what's really impressive? Courage, honesty, telling the truth, being vulnerable, having the guts to admit when you're wrong. And that's the kind of storytelling that makes a real difference, is the kind that is conversational and human. In other words, it's less of a performance, less of a broadcast.
Definitely.
And more, you know, it opens a dialogue in the way that the greatest poets and playwrights have always done. It opens a dialogue about the human condition. And I want business owners to understand that every day they have situations in their present day life, as well as, if they know how to work with them properly, in their own personal history, in their past, situations that could illuminate something about the human condition. And those are the stories that, when shared, make the biggest difference. People can relate to them. Yes, it's something happened to you, but it's not a personal story because I can relate to it. Maybe not the circumstances, maybe not the situation.
But there is itself. Yeah. I see.
But the underlying thing. So that's one path, right? Our story is not only what separates us, it's actually what unites us. The other path is the very practical thing, which is why I assume people listen to Social Media Talks show, is that, listen, we all recognize that content is the currency of our time, that without creating and sharing compelling content on the channels that people are consuming it, which, you know, is largely stuff on our phone, the apps and social media platforms that, you know, that occupy so much of our attention, we're invisible, we're irrelevant. So we know we need to do something, right? Mm. If anyone has been awake for the past 10 years at all, it's this sense of like, well, I gotta make stuff, gotta share stuff, gotta put something out there. But we get caught up in this bind between those two things. On the one hand, there's our own persona, our own personal history, and we feel like some of that, you know, we just gotta keep that private forever. And on the other hand, we feel like we want more attention, more visibility for our business. The solution to both is the same. The solution to both is being real and using this incredible gift that we all have of story to connect, to, you know, create awareness, build relationships, establish trust. What I often call the art of story.
Yeah.
Using awareness, relationships, trust. We need to establish that real human connection. That's what people crave. You know, thanks to the incredible advances in technology, human beings today in 2018 have never been more connected. Mm. We've never been more accessible. We've never been able to reach out and touch someone, as the old television commercials for the telephone company used to go. But at the same time, we've also never been more distant and disconnected from other people and from ourselves.
I was just right? about to say that to you.
Yes. So, you know, our average human attention span, is seconds at best. And we are living, and everyone agrees, we are living in distracted, fragmented, interrupted times. You know, our lives are, a series of distractions. Mm. Story is the antidote to distraction and disconnection. Mm. When we can connect with ourselves and with our own experience, with our values, with our process, and when we can share those relatively abstract things in concrete ways through story, we connect and people crave that connection.
Yeah, I totally agree. I see that. And it's just when you're saying that there, it was actually something that I had read a couple of months back from Mark Schaefer, where he said, we are now living in the age of digital shock. And it is digital shock is what we're going through, is because we are so, you know, we say, oh, the world is so much smaller and we can connect with each other so much quicker. And, you know, I use the terminology, you know, geography is history, but yet geography is history. All right, I can sit here and I can talk to you, and we're talking on Zoom and whatever, and you're in Arizona, I'm in Dublin and whatever, but the same token is, you know, when am I going to actually knock into my next door neighbor and actually have a chat with them? Because I can say, right, well, look, you know, text me, message me, whatever. And I think there's that disconnect is, you know, has become so prevalent as we speak now, that we're not actually remembering that. And especially when it comes to marketing and to social media and to digital and all of that, is that we've made it so accessible for ourselves to talk to each other without, like, I've seen instances where I've been out where people have been sitting at the same table and have been texting each other. Like, that's how bad sometimes it has got. But then, as you say, on the other side, we have so much technology and we are able to connect with so many people, which is wonderful. But I think when it comes to the art of storytelling, that we do lose out a small bit on that. And I think it's getting back to that. And your point earlier on about, you know, showing your vulnerabilities and showing that you do. I actually read a post the other day from a friend of ours who got on social media and said that she was having a very bad day and things weren't going great. And the amount of people that commented on that was like, there was over 200 or 300 comments on it. But what it showed me was, is it showed me the human side of her, but it also showed me the human side of other people, that people care about each other. And when you show that vulnerability, I think people are more inclined to talk to you and to help you. And, you know, and I suppose that works for business as well. If you're honest and saying, look, you know, we're doing a sale because of X, Y, and Z, well and good. People may just say, well, let's rally around this local business or whatever it may be.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think there's any easy answers on this question of the role of technology in our contemporary life. I mean, it's very much, you know, of the times to disparage it and say like, oh, isn't this terrible? And look what this has done. And listen, there's some solid research that shows that certainly in the populations that have been studied, that excessive time on social media increases anxiety, depression, and so on. However, just as there are studies that have shown anything that you want to demonstrate, I always wonder about other things. For example, you know, if somebody eat, you know, there's studies that show that if you eat a high protein diet, that there's various other kinds of health consequences. Well, the question is, yes, but what's the form of the protein that you're eating? If it's a McDonald's hamburger, you're also getting a lot of sugar, a lot of sodium in your burger. So is the problem the burger or is it the salt? You know, it's like and as a scientist here, I can say like, you know, our study designs are as good as they can get, and we're always evolving the thing. So on the one hand, you've got plenty of evidence out there, and certainly there's a conversation that social media is destroying the very fabric of our humanity. I'm not so sure.
No, I was, yeah.
What's also not being studied, but somebody ought to, is the amount of what we would call pro-social behavior that's actually happening on this very same platform. It's the amount of 12-year-olds that, you know, 40 years ago would have been despondent and desperately alone because there was just nobody else in their small town that was interested in the weird stuff that they're into. And now the fact that they can participate in conversations with kids from anywhere about their hobby, about their freaky weird interest, about their, you know, the fact that there are 12-year-old girls making slime, right, and selling it on Instagram, and whether they're selling it or not. I mean, I took my two kids. I've got two boys, 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we just went to a kids' business fair here in Phoenix just this last weekend. And, you know, there was a couple of booths of girls, you know, making slime. And even though, you know, they make $80, $100 a month. I mean, it's not like, you know, there are definitely some kids out there making a lot more than $400,000 a year with their their Instagram accounts. But they loved it. They loved the fact that it was something to do. It was something to share. It was something to talk about. So I think, you know, one thing we know for sure as humans is that we have judgments. There's no way around that. That seems to be part of our makeup. We don't see things the way they are. We see things and have an opinion about it. Like that's good, that's bad. This is terrible. You know, I'm not personally convinced about that. I think the real question is like, what are you going to do with it? Like a shovel can be terrible if you're going to take it and whack someone over the head with it, or, you know, you can use it to dig a well.
Yeah.
So it's not the tool, it's the intent and it's the action.
Exactly. And I think that's
it. This exposes so much of more that really we're at the beginning of a conversation about mental health and about social, you know, participation and about so many other kinds of things. So the media doesn't want to engage in complexity. So they're very much enamored of the story that, you know, this is terrible and it's undermining everything. But I think we're at the beginning of maybe a newly emerging kind of connection, and we just haven't invented the rules for it yet.
And I think, you know, like you say that, like, and I see, you know, like if we look back 20 years of television ago, like, you know, there could be a horror movie on, or there could be something on that's distressing, and people say, oh, that was a terrible program last night, but you can still switch it off. you can still switch that button off if you want to do so. And likewise with social, you can either turn it on. And like, there is a lot of people, like, you know, I know a number of elderly people that would use social media to stay connected with their family and with their kids, and even in regards to being alone in the house at night, so that they have something there, that they have someone to talk to if they're alone. So, you know, it has a huge amount of benefits. But it's like everything, it's, as you say, it's how you use the tool, it's how you use it as well. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about storytelling and how we actually can create a story for our business. Because, you know, that is probably, you know, a huge point that probably needs to be talked about, because I know we've talked about the psychology behind it. But
so the first thing is just a very practical distinction needs to be made regarding what I call the storytelling spectrum. So if you think of big S story at one end and small s story at the other, you've got epic stories on one side and then little everyday story on the other side. And so many people are confused because we love consuming epic stories. When we go to the theater, we go to the movies, we read a book, or, you know, whatever, we think that the kind of storytelling we should do is the epic kind. And so you get a lot of people promoting some nonsense about how you should use the hero's journey model that Joseph Campbell developed years ago to understand, you know, comparative mythology as some sort of a framework or a blueprint for telling your personal story. And that's quite frankly ridiculous. It's something that some of the you know, overnight experts on storytelling have seized onto because it gives them something to teach. And there's others that maybe aren't talking about the hero's journey method, but have developed their own kind of template for epic storytelling. And it just doesn't serve. I mean, there are times when we have epic things in our lives and we should be able to tell those stories when it's appropriate. But for the most part, I want business people to understand that the kind of storytelling that really makes a difference professionally, that makes a difference in business and on social media, is skewed toward the everyday. In other words, knock the capital S off the story and just start creating and sharing stories. It's also something that people are confused about. They think that the most important story they need to tell is their own. You know, people say, oh, I just need to tell my story. And the truth of the matter is that at least at first, nobody wants to hear your story, especially if by that you mean your life story. You know, we've kind of been inundated with the rags to riches framework, you know, the gutter to glory, woe to win, you know, struggle to success. It's all the same thing. And we're tired of it. And we've become more jaded because we know that the reason someone's telling us this is because they want them to sell us something. So instead, I think I want people to start by looking toward the little s storytelling, the anecdotes, the examples, the illustrations, and to tell more than your own story. So the first thing about that I think is important is, and I wish there were a better word for this, Alan, it's a little awkward, but I think that story listening has to come first. It's way more important than storytelling. Listening is in fact the primary skill in communication. And we think that talking is. And you can see this if you look at all the training and expert advice that's available on communication skills and, you know, public speaking and sales training. And it's all premised on this, I think, incorrect idea that if you become a better talker, you're going to be more effective. The reality is the opposite. If you become a better listener, you're going to be more effective. So we need to listen for the stories happening around us. Talk to our clients, our customers, our patients, our community. Use our voice and our microphone and our channels to tell their small stories, to kind of reveal the community to itself. That's really important. Another thing is to understand that there are many, many kinds of story-driven content. It's not just, you know, so many people approach storytelling like it's some sort of copywriting problem. Like, well, I need to figure out how to tell my story, and then I get that figured out, and then I'll use it over and over and over again. No, story is a living phenomenon. So as you tell stories about your business, and I have a little framework that helps explain this. We can talk about the 5x5 matrix, 5 story types and 5 story topics. As you tell stories around your business, make sure you're telling stories in different ways, using different media and about different topics. You know, this is not as much as I ground the personal work that I do with private clients in their personal stories. That's only, it's foundational, but it's just one part of the puzzle. What a really evolved story methodology includes actively seeking out the stories happening around us as we move forward with our business. So that's still a little bit abstract, but that's starting to get us in the general direction we need to go. You know, stories have always been told with pictures, with words, you know, and now with audio and video in a digital age. Those are the categories we have to work with. Everybody is carrying around a multimedia production studio in their pocket. You know, these phones that we have now are amazing. And I mean, having grown up with technology since even before the personal computer was invented, I mean, the first computer I ever used as a kid was the VAX terminal at the university where my dad's radio station was located, back when it was a little one-room station. And, you know, the technology that we have in our pocket is incredible, and we're not using it.
Yeah, and it is true. Like, you know, as you say, multimedia in your pocket, and it is a production studio. Because there is so many different formats in which you can use it and you can tell that story. Like, as you were saying there, like, you know, I look at the way social media has gone in the last number of years, that it's gone from where it used to be a lot of text, then it became text and image, and now it's becoming video. And it's really, really starting to, you know, people are more interested in video. What is it that Mark Zuckerberg, I think, said, by 2020, 85% of the content on Facebook will be video. So going by that, you know, that is another form of storytelling, and it's another form of, you know, stories that are going to be relevant, but it's also going to be that people are going to enjoy, and they're going to understand, they're going to listen to, they're going to watch, and they're going to take something from that.
Yes. And at the same time, you know, video is increasingly prominent. We've also got rising quickly the importance of audio. You know, more than 30% of Google searches are now being done with voice. The amount of podcast consumption globally, you know, we're in a very much in the middle of a second wave of the podcasting boom. You know, the first one started in around 2005, 2006. The second one probably started around 2014 when Serial first made a big splash and narrative nonfiction storytelling kind of broke out from the public radio channels where it had been done into the mass consumption. And there's no sign that this trend is reversing. So again, our basic human equipment, you know, eyes, ears, mouth, you know, the ability to write written words, make pictures, record your voice, and, you know, take video, is just, this is the environment we all need to be working in. It's not going back. No, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And I want to always say one thing about audio, because I think I agree that video is important, and I want everyone making more videos. I need to be making more videos. And the production time is longer. The turnaround time is longer. And there's something else that I think not a lot of people have thought about. I certainly haven't heard anyone else say this. Video is important because as human animals, our primary perception, for those of us with sight, our primary perception is visual. We get much more information through the visual channel than we do through any other channel. However, it is easier to trick the eye than it is to trick the ear.
Yeah.
You can rent a Lamborghini and put on a fancy suit and pay for an expensive videographer or filmmaking team to come in and shoot some glamorous video about your business. But when I hear your voice ears, I will know if you're telling the truth or not. And so will you.
Yep.
Because there's something about the quality of the human voice, something about the intimacy and our ability to detect emotional, you know, like very micro nuances in the emotion of the human voice. It really is, I think, our primary truth-telling medium. And I want more people to embrace that. I mean, certainly it's not just because I grew up in radio and you're a radio guy and we can agree. People need to understand that your voice is probably your most intimate tool and start using it that way.
And the other side of that is and you know, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I totally agree with it, because, you know, if you look at studies about, you know, and even when we look at the mind and the way the mind works, and, you know, we look at video, and video is done because you have to sit there and you have to watch it. You have to, you physically have to sit in front Correct. Of a screen of some shape or form. And, you know, that's okay, that's well and good. But if you're listening to an audio, which is, i.e. a podcast or whatever it may be, is you can multitask while you're doing that. Now, the other side of that is that if you are multitasking, we all know about the conscious and the unconscious mind, where the conscious mind is only 7% and the unconscious mind is 93%. So if you're multitasking, the conscious mind is looking. So whether you're out for a walk, your conscious mind is walking. It's concentrating on walking, as in putting one foot in front of the other. Whereas your unconscious mind, if you're listening to a podcast while you're walking, it's going deeper into the mind. So it's going deeper in again. So you're getting a much more in-depth, you're getting deeper in to the actual psyche of that person. So with the audio, you're going to get so much more from that.
Yes, you know, a lot has been made of executive function, right? Mm. The brain's ability, which is primarily located in the prefrontal cortex, to focus. Mm. And it's often, you know, in the terms of productivity and performance, you know, personal productivity and workplace productivity and so on, it's often thought that the area that needs to be exercised is this prefrontal cortex, this ability to laser in on something and focus on it and make the kind of, you know, decision making and so on. Turns out that is actually not the most powerful part of our human mind. So there's something called the default network, which works through association, not through conscious logical thought. It makes connections, it sees ideas, it brings in related components and integrates things. The default network is actually suppressed by the prefrontal cortex. In order to focus, you actually have to shut off the default network. However, when does it come online? When you're driving, when you're in the shower, when you're dreaming. The default network is where creativity and inspiration and connection and, you know, it is where the really good stuff comes from. So, in, you know, you need both to be a functioning human being, but I think an overemphasis on prefrontal cortex, focus, you know, logical thought is doing us a disservice and creating and sharing the kind of story. I mean, if you think about it, at some level, storytelling is, you would think, is passive, right? If you're sitting in the movie theater, it looks like all you're doing is sitting there and there's beams of light coming into your eyes. In reality, it's probably the most active form of consumption. Your neurons are firing at an incredible rate. Even though you're just sitting there and eating your popcorn or whatever you're doing, you've got incredibly powerful molecules, cortisone, oxytocin, dopamine, that are being triggered by the story. Dopamine, you know, it creates that attention, that curiosity, that engagement. Like we're hanging on, when we're literally hanging on someone's word, or we can't, you know, there's a cliffhanger in a movie, we're having an incredible surge of dopamine in our system. When we watch a viral video that's adorable, or it's about the, you know, the veteran who returns home to surprises his daughter, you know, his 8-year-old girl, or you know, some of these incredible, they're commercials, but they're stories that have come out of Thailand. You know, the little boy who someone did an act of kindness for him when he was a street urchin, and now he's grown and he's a doctor and he's able to save the old man. All these things that we're just bawling with, you know, because oxytocin, the what's sometimes called the love hormone. This thing that creates a bond between a mother and a baby during breastfeeding. And, you know, like this is being triggered by stories. Cortisol is a stress hormone, but it also increases our ability to focus and react. We are playing with powerful molecules and we need to, you know, really take, there's a certain amount of responsibility that comes with that. Obviously it can be used for good or for evil. But this is what's underlying the thing. So back to the practical, right? Should you set out to make a viral video? No, of course not. Most of the time when you do that, it either costs too much money and doesn't work, or you just waste a lot of time or whatever. When you understand that a story told in a, you know, delivered in a compelling way is playing with this powerful invisible force that shapes our human experience, you can find the power in the simple things. Mm. You can find the power in the everyday interactions, things that happen behind the scenes in your business. You know, take us there. Show us your people at work. Show us the, you know, The Office is such a great, you know, television program, both in the UK and the version that was produced here in the States, because it's kind of mundane and ridiculous. You know, it takes us into an environment that's familiar to many people, you know, boring office, doing menial work, you know, a paper company, right?
Yeah.
And yet we're seeing this human drama playing out there, and these characters, some of them are larger than life, but in a way they're only larger because they're doing a more exaggerated version of something we can all relate to.
Or they can actually relate to, you can actually relate them to people who you've worked with and say,
exactly,
well, that is Alan, and that's Adrian,
yes,
you know, that's
for sure. Way.
Because we all do, like, we all do it. Like, I know, especially, like, I'm not going to say the person's name, but there was a Ricky Gervais when I worked in a corporate business, there was that person. I can remember him as plain as day, and it's exactly, and I actually said that to my wife. I said, that is X. That's Mr. Yeah. X there. And you went, oh God, it is. It really, because you understand it and you see that. So as you say, taking someone, you know, into the back room or into behind the counter and letting them see what goes on behind the scenes, it's just, it's gold material, because people really enjoyed it. And that helps them to understand as well what's going on in front of house as much as the back of house, you know?
Absolutely. And something that I think, you know, I know, Alan, because we've talked about this, we both agree, is that companies need to be empowering their employees as storytellers as well, rather than trying to control the story and only having the marketing people or the, you know, the video production people kind of own the story. I mean, you know, everyone, you work with characters. If you work with other people, right? Many of us, like I have a solo practice. I work primarily with contractors on certain things, but I'm the one doing most of the work. But if you work in an environment with other people, you've got characters. You've got the cut up. You've got the, you know, the shy one who's also brilliant and passionate about something. You know, you've got the engineer who's like kind of a caricature of everything engineers are. And she's, you know, super smart and super awkward and whatever, right? We've all got these characters. Let the characters out. They are the story. And people's, you know, listen, some people are not going to like it. Fine. But they don't like it already. Like, it's not new. So exactly. the primary point here, I think, that we could learn from The Office or any other kind of, you know, television or movie storytelling, is that we need to be making the shows, not the commercials. And so many people who turn to social media for business think that what they need to be making are essentially the commercials. How do I promote my thing, sell my thing, get the lead, get the sale, instead of making the show, right? I know that media consumption has changed so much since we were kids, you know, and now nobody watches, and people watch as few commercials as possible on television. We've got Netflix and everything else. We need to be making those programs, not the thing that would interrupt the program to try to sell us something.
Yeah.
And when we can embrace that and start looking at our life through the lens of the television producer or the documentary filmmaker, you know, what's interesting here? What's happening around here? What can we show that would reveal something about who we are, about what we do, about our core values, about our customers, about their problems, about how we solve them, about the silly stuff that happens as we do that? You know, there's so much material. It's not a lack of story material. It's either a lack of confidence, some sort of a mindset thing, or a lack of basic knowledge of how to put it together. Because, you know, even though I say everyone is fluent in the language of story, there's also some basic principles that people could learn that would improve their storytelling. But the way to do it is by doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not by thinking
don't
you need to learn something first.
Yeah, don't
You'll
be afraid.
You'll learn so much more from just getting started than you will from having an expert come in and teach you some basic knowledge. You're going to have to execute it anyway in order to get the real learning.
I've wrote numerous blogs on different subjects, and I've, each time I've gone, that's a great blog. Yeah, that's going to get me loads of views, and that's going to get loads of things. And it was actually a blog that I wrote. I actually, when I was training, I actually wrote this blog, and this is going back maybe 5-6 years ago. And I just decided, it was actually on the train coming home one day, and I says, I start writing it, and you know yourself when you start getting into a flow and you just go. And it was just basically about me going back to college at you know, as a mature student, And that has gotten the most views on my blog, at the website alone, because it was something that was very relevant and it was just a standard story. Now, there wasn't, you know, any life-changing moments in it, but it was a human story. And I think that's the key, and I think that's more or less what we've been talking about here today, is having that human element, that humanizing your brand or humanizing your business, because that is probably the most important. And like that, we don't see the stuff that's around us that is actually very funny or that is actually very interesting. You know,
yes.
I talked to Jay Baer on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about talk triggers. And he was saying, like, you know, it's some of the easiest things that people want to know. We had a locksmith, we work with a locksmith. And he says, why don't you just get the locksmith to show how the actual lock works? You know, and that will go far. And in fairness, we said it to them and they done it. And it got a huge amount of views because it was a simple, simple thing. It was an everyday thing that people wanted to know about and wanted to learn about.
You know, I think, and that was a great conversation. I listened to it. Jay's brilliant in that book. Everyone needs to read that book.
Oh, super book.
In a way, we're saying something similar, which is, although he's talking specifically about word of mouth and how businesses need a word of mouth strategy. What he's ended up saying is something that I often say in my workshops, which is, listen, what we're fundamentally talking about here is you need to work on your real human reputation and what your brand, whether it's a personal leadership brand or it's the brand of your company, what your brand means is it lives out there with people. In other words, your brand is what people say about you, not what you say about yourself. And we can be more intentional about that. We can actually feed the reputation machine by providing stories and anecdotes and things. You know, everyone wants their business to grow. Most people want their business to grow through referrals. We all, you know, referrals are a major source of business, especially for service firms, but also for products. You know, people talk, oh, I love this. You know, my wife has really curly hair, but for years she was doing what most women with curly hair do, which is trying to tame the curl, manage it, you know, get it blown out, straightened, you know, all these things, right? Well, she recently discovered a community of women online who have embraced the curl, and they have a whole different set of approaches. And there's a let your curl out and do various things. And she's fascinated by this. And so I hear her now talking to her friends when we're all, you know, at the park or around town. And she said, oh, what are you doing to your hair? It's amazing. Oh, well, I'm using this product. And you know what? It's a cheap product that you can get in any pharmacy, any drugstore. Walmart here. But she's promoting it. You know, oh, this is the best. You don't need the expensive stuff. Yeah. Get this one. It really works. We all want referrals. We all want word of mouth, but we're not doing what we need to do to give people the material to share. Mm. We're kind of hoping they'll figure it out. So I highly, highly recommend for listeners who haven't heard that Jay Baer conversation, go back and listen to that, because these two conversations go really nicely together.
Yeah, they do,
actually. We need to be sharing stories that other people can share when we're not there. Oh, I got to tell you, you know, I got a friend who dot, 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 dot. And then, you know, we do this all the time. We tell other people's stories because they're cool stories. We need to be giving people stories they can retell. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is being more intentional about this, really thinking about how can I change the way I conduct my business to make the storytelling that other people are going to do more powerful, more compelling. You know, it's not just a marketing problem. It's an operations problem. If we change the way we talk to people, the way we interact, if we change some of our basic practices, what happens when somebody books an appointment? What happens after they leave? All of those things are the opportunity for other people to tell stories about us.
Yeah.
They're already telling stories about us to themselves or others. And if they're not good ones, it's no mystery that you don't get a lot of repeat business.
Very true. I could sit here and talk about this all day. We're way over time, but you know what? It has been so worth it. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Adrian, I ask my guests every week a very simple question, and it's not related to anything that we talk about in the podcast. And that question is if you had the chance to invite someone to dinner, whether it be past or present, who would it be and why?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that question, so I thought of so many different examples, and then they literally just flew out of my head right now in the moment. And the one that popped into mind is wasn't on my list a minute ago, but I'm going to stick with it. Barack Obama.
Oh.
And the questions that I would like to ask were not about, you know, affairs of state and so on. I'd like to ask the question: how did you keep going?
Yeah.
And how do you keep going in the face of so much divisiveness, in the face of so much hate? And listen, I have plenty of things I'm very critical of those 8 years of our presidency for. You know, my time spent overseas in the Middle East and in Africa, I have some very specific issues that are problematic for me about that administration. But setting all that aside for a second, there's a human dimension to this. I'm not aware of a world leader that at least in recent memory received, you know, so much recalcitrance, so much opposition, so much. And I'd just like to talk about that. How do you keep a smile on your face and keep doing what you're doing? Mm. Whether you like the guy or don't like the guy, I think we need to listen to people who've followed a difficult path and see what lessons we can take away for ourselves.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I totally agree. I would love to sit down. He would be one on my list. There is a very short list, and he would definitely be up in there in the top three of them as well. Adrian, how can people reach out to you if they want to get in contact with you to talk more about this?
Sure. So, you know, I'm available in a Google search bar near you. if you just Google Adrian McIntyre. Now, there's an Irish footballer who's got my name, but I'm the other guy. Or if you go to my website, storyprophet.com. I'm doing a lot of training, I've realized that so many people need the practical training. We've talked at a fairly high level, but there are very specific things about how to tell a story, a personal anecdote, and so on. So if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn or follow my Facebook page, you'll find a lot of the videos and the specifics that I'm sharing that will be much more kind of practical if you're ready to embrace, as I want you to, storytelling as a living practice.
Brilliant, brilliant. And it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And, you know, as I said, there is, if you check out Adrian's website and also follow him on social, you're going to find so much more content that is so, so good as well. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today, and we wish you continued success in the future, Adrian. And no doubt, I'm not going to say, I say it every week that I have to get just back on the podcast, but this is going to be definitely one that we will have to do very, very soon again. So because I think we've so much more to talk about. We just tipped the surface of what we're talking about here today. So as I said, it was an absolute pleasure to chat with you today, and we wish you continued success, and we should talk to you soon. Thanks so much
for
coming
on. Thank you for having me.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So my thanks to Adrian for coming on the podcast today and sharing with us some fantastic tips and tricks, and also a lot of insight there into storytelling as well. And as I said, if you'd like to find out more information about Adrian, you can log on to his website at storyprophet.com, and you can also follow him on all the usual social media networks as well. So once again, my thanks to Adrian for coming on the podcast today. And if you'd like to listen to any of our previous podcasts, you can log on to our website at compassmedia.ie/podcasts. And all of our podcasts are also available on Mixcloud, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a rating and review, as we are always thrilled to receive your feedback on any of the programs. You can also subscribe to the Social Media Talks podcast there, so you never miss an episode either. And if you'd like the show notes for this episode or for any of the previous podcasts, you can log on to our website at compassmedia.ie/SM Talks. And if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, please do get in contact with us by email at smtalks@compassmedia.ie. If you want to find out more about the services that Compass Media provide, from social media marketing and training to management to podcast services, visit our website to find out all of the details. And if you'd also like, if you'd like to reach out to me and connect with me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all you have to do is search for Alan Hennessy or for Compass Media, and you'll find me there. And the Social Media Talks podcast is sponsored by Content Cal, creating solutions to simplify and speed up how teams can plan, collaborate on, approve, publish, and analyze social media content in a familiar and intuitive calendar interface. And in just 2 years, they have been trusted by over 10,000 businesses and agencies in 110 countries to deliver social media content at scale, and have recently won an award for Content Management Tool of the Year. And for more information, you can visit their website at www.contentcal.io. And the Social Media Talks podcast is proudly supported by charityradio.ie, one of Ireland's leading online radio stations, supporting charities across Ireland for free. I've been Alan Hennessy for the Social Media Talks podcast, and that is about my lot for today. So on the next time I see you, have a great week. And as I always say, be social. On the next time. Bye-bye.
Social Media Talks podcast is a production from CompassMedia.ie.